Welcome to the Omni Gamers Club podcast, the podcast for games on all platforms, including airport kiosks showing the blue screen of death. I am Mark Uessa, and today we have a special guest subbing in for Daniel while he's away in sunny old Scotland. We are welcoming a local friend, Kennedy Goodkey. Welcome, Kennedy.
Hello. Hi, Mark. It's been a while.
It has been a little while. I feel like I haven't seen you in person since that maybe TCTC.
I think that's got to be it, yeah.
That's probably it. But, of course, I know you from local game design circles. We've, you know, gone to Vancouver Playtest Group on and off for years now. And more recently, I know that you are one half, a co-designer of a game called Winter Palace, which is a kind of a larger social game that you were showcasing at Indie Alley at TCTC. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. Yes. When you played it, I believe we were still playing it manually, even though at that point we already knew that that was not the direction we were going.
Yeah. I believe we were playing with plastic boxes and popsicle sticks.
Yes. Yes. Which has about a 45 minute setup time, which is a non-starter. And, we always knew that the game was going to work better digitally. And, you know, we've hit a bit of a bottleneck because, you know, our main programmer guy needs to make money in real life, right? So, right. So yeah, we've got a ways to go.
So. Great. Well, I'd like to ask you a little bit more about Winter Palace, maybe at near the end of the show, but sure. I should... since I'm the only regular host here, I would be remiss if I didn't explain that this is our playlist episode we're going to be doing this time. So we're not going to be covering one game. We're going to be talking about what we've been playing. So if it's all right, I'd like to lead us off with a little bit of news or kind of what news we're interested in.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm gonna talk about the requisite Gen Con news. I'm such a bad board game fan that I really don't know any titles that were announced at Gen Con. Don't follow what's the latest hotness. Mm-hmm. So I had to look it up. And one title that caught my attention is actually a remake of an older game. It's actually a reskin. Okay. Do you know a game called Corridor?
I do. I'm terrible at it.
Really? I don't even know if I'm good at it. I can picture it on the wall of Rain City Games. It has a certain look to it. It's from that company that makes a lot of like wooden games, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They have quite that, you know, yeah, that wooden brown and whitish stained aesthetic. Yeah.
Abstract to the core, mm-hmm. But very like kind of aesthetically pleasing as like design objects.
Yes. Yeah. They're artworks, really.
Yeah. And yeah. I just noticed that they are releasing a themed version of Corridor with the Pac-Man license. So you can imagine it's like a grid and then there's these walls and I suppose there's these pieces you have to pick up. So kind of Pac-Man, I guess maybe they got bugged by enough people that said, you got to make a Pac-Man version of this, they're finally doing it.
Wow. Pac-Man, you got to think Corridor. That's going to live outside of that design aesthetic.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to have that as an art object for my home. Maybe I can convince my wife that it's decorative. So it's a board game you can leave out just as a talking piece. So that struck my fancy. How about yourself, Kennedy? Any news that's interesting you in the game space?
Well, also Gen Con, although it was announced about two weeks ago, I think, there is a new and supposedly final Root expansion coming. They've said that they're going to have three individual factions released in it, and they've only sort of put two out there, frogs and bats, and some photos of early versions of the player boards definitely snuck their way out of Gen Con. So as a big Root fan, I've hunted those down to take a peek. So
tell me how many expansions does that make it then? So this will be
not counting the Clockwork expansions, two of them, which are Atoma. This will be number four. And there's also some minor, you can get, you know, an extra deck of new cards. There's the Hirelings box. There's, you know, different bits and pieces that haven't been full expansions, mini expansions. So, yeah.
Got it. So this one sounds like a pretty robust size one.
That's about the only thing that really hit my world.
I'm going to announce a little bit of unrelated to Gen Con news that just happened. So this is a bit of a follow-up to some news that our past guest, Jillian Ross, was sharing with us. She hinted that she basically works with Brotherwise Games and other game publishers. And she was saying she's working on a cool new project, and that is RPG related, TTRPG related. And so I think the campaign just launched today, perhaps, or in the last 24 hours. And it's for a tabletop RPG campaign based on Brandon Sanderson's he's a prolific fantasy author.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the author of Mistborn.
Yeah.
Mistborn is the series that I'm more familiar with. But he's got a couple of other series that he's well known for. So that definitely piqued my interest. And it looks really slick.
I believe he also finished the Robert Jordan series. Oh. Wheel of Time, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Not my genre, so I'm not really familiar, but... Yeah.
I'm actually not that super knowledgeable about fantasy fiction either, but Brandon Sanderson's always had a cool twist. Like Mistborn is to do with kind of like metal magic, basically being able to control, gain an affinity with certain types of metals, and they give you special powers. And I thought that's super cool. And he seems to be really into tabletop RPGs. And so this campaign, I just watched the intro video. It looks super slick. Looks really nicely done up. And apparently all of the source books that are coming out are going to be like canon to his world. And it's going to cover actually all of his fantasy worlds are going to be represented.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's called Cosmere. The RPG system is called Cosmere. So Cosmere, kind of like cashmere, I guess.
Right.
And it seems really big and flashy. As of recording, it was on the verge of making $6 million.
Oh, geez. They might make their goal then.
I think they might. I think they just might. They might actually oust, what was the other one? The Avatar, The Last Airbender role-playing game campaign that made like $10 million or something like that.
Oh, wow.
I think they're going to bust the doors on that one probably.
That's impressive.
So that's definitely a campaign to watch out for. And just one other piece of TTRPG related news is I was mentioning in our last episode about Chance of Sinnar, the video game, that it reminded me of a TTRPG called Ultraviolet Grasslands, kind of like this kind of Technicolor, kind of funky post-apocalypse, like of the weird.
Okay.
And they're making what they call an Ultraviolet Grasslands RPG equal, which means... It could be a sequel. It could be a prequel. I don't know, I guess. It's called Our Golden Age. And it's basically kind of like society at the heights. So where in Ultraviolet Grassland, you're looking at the ruins of civilization and exploring through it. And in Our Golden Age, you're going to be at the height of it. So like you're going to be visiting Chichen Itza when their people were like living there and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Nice.
So that part of it sounds kind of cool. And always the artwork is great. And the world seems super funky and off the wall.
Yeah, I love it when somebody comes up with a good creative into, you know, whatever your medium is, right?
That's I definitely just don't like the trad stuff. So as weird as you can get, the better for me. Cool. All right, Kennedy, any other news you wanted to talk about?
That's my bucket right there.
All right, cool. That's about all the news I can handle too. So let's roll into... Game. So what games you've been playing or what games have you been interested in lately?
Well, just this morning, my daughter and I, we used to play board games every Saturday. We still try to, but yeah, she's a teenager now, so it's getting harder. So taking advantage of spring break, this morning we went out and got coffee and a muffin. And I brought a new game that I just acquired with us, and Lacuna. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. It's talking about, you know, an abstract game that is art. This absolutely fits that category. And I'd seen it, and I'm not big on abstracts, but this one just somehow caught my attention and appealed to me. It comes with a like a fabric board and a bunch of little wooden flowers that you spread out over it, and then these little metal playing pieces. It's gorgeous. I don't think it quite raises to the level of, you know, the thing you put on the coffee table to impress guests. But anyway, we it took us about 3 minutes to learn it. And after our first game, we were playing it in about 5 minutes per game, including setup. Went really quickly. And both of us were, you know, seeing strategy unfold each game going, oh, wait a second, there's this level that I've never considered. Anyway, we were super happy with it. I ended up having a second coffee, which is usually a bad idea for me. but it was just, you know, an excuse to stay and play more. So, and ultimately she beat the heck out of me for the most part. I won the first game and the last two, and she beat me in every other single one.
Wow. Sounds like you played quite a few then.
We did.
So cloth board, I think that's great. That's so underutilized. I feel like, and it tends to go over well, or in my experience, when they do a cloth, a board or play mat. I really like that. And you said it, so it's an abstract with just like a few pieces then?
Yeah, I guess it's seven sets of seven flowers, you know, each in a different color and slightly different shape. And then each player has six little metal pawns. And, yeah, it's just a matter of there's the seven sets and there's, you place a pawn on the board and you have to place it between two matching flowers. And when you do, you get both of those flowers and you do that until everybody's placed out all their pawns. And then from there, every remaining flower goes to whoever's pawn is closest to it. That is the game. And then the winner is who gets a majority of majorities. So there's seven flowers of each set. You get four of it, you've won that majority. And whoever gets four or more of those majorities wins the game.
Hmm. That sounds very intriguing. I kind of feel like I'd like an abstract in my life. I feel like I need that. So that sounds really cool. Yeah. Nice. There you go. Rain City Games, our local, friendly local game store.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't been playing a lot in the way of board games, but I have tried a new digital one. It may be a physical one, but I tried it on Board Game Arena. It seemed kind of cool as far as themes go. I like a Civ game like any other strategy game fan, and they were promoting this thing called Paths of Civilization. Are you still playing on Board Game Arena at all?
Less than I used to, but I still open it at least once every day.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to check this out because, you know, like, I feel like the short Civ game is kind of a holy grail, and I don't know if anyone's quite done it. I think it's supposed to be like 60 to 90 minutes, but like the play style is fairly simplistic. It seems to be deck building, but the cards you play out, you basically, if you play them on one half of the board, you have to lay out four of them. One half kind of upgrades your persistent tier in certain areas. And then the other half gives you resources, which you need to expend to unlock certain things. So it's just the placement of those four cards. And as you proceed through the eras, you unlock more powerful versions of those. So it's not really winning any awards for originality there, but it's fairly streamlined. And I started playing it just by like, not reading the rules at all, as I often do, and just like shoving pieces.
That's how I play stuff all the time. Yeah.
And I'm starting to slowly understand the subtleties, but basically my first couple of games just ended with me woefully in last place. And I think that's actually a good sign. I'd be worried if I was wandering around and I won, right?
Yeah, right, right.
But I don't know if it has a lot of the depth I'm looking for. I feel like even something like It's a Wonderful World, I don't know if you played that one at all.
I've tried that and stumbled through it and kind of shrugged when I was done, to be honest. But
Actually, those two games are fairly similar in my mind. It's sort of like drafting, sort of like resource allocations and how to expand each card, kind of like that. I think It's a Wonderful World might have a little bit more depth, but I'm still early in my journey. I'm not going to write off Paths of Civilization just yet. But
you know, deck building is my jam, so I should check it out.
Maybe.
Well, if we're talking about BGA, the two that I just can't stop playing, and one is new and one is like going on years now, is Nidavellir, which I think I might have bought. I definitely bought all of Nidavellir at once.
You know,
okay. The base and two expansions. And that was from just a little bit of noodling on BGA, and there's a game that I found very intuitive to figure out.
Interesting. So now it's Nidavellir. Remind me, that's the one. Does it have sort of like a Vikings theme? Is that the one?
Yeah, absolutely. That sort of Danish sort of aesthetic. Iceland and Danish cultures are, you know, obviously very similar, but
Scandinavian, right?
Exactly. And
tell me, like, what hooked you about it? Like, I lightly touched upon it, but it didn't hook me. So I'm curious, what about it hooked you?
Yeah, this is a good question. I think for me, there is such a range of very nuanced strategies to it. And definitely initially I dove in and took a singular path because, you know, like, oh, there's lots of points to be gained this way. But as time has gone on, I've become much more nuanced in different paths to getting points and really how much it can shake up from game to game, particularly, but not exclusively, with those expansions. They each change the game in, you know, subtle ways, adding different sets of cards that you purchase in different ways at different times. The constantly morphing inroads to victory are something that is just constantly fascinating to me.
Very nice.
The other one that's really got me on BGA is, I don't know how it's been around, I'm going to say 5 years or so now, in the real world, is Barrage. I think technically it's Barrage, actually. I think it's French. And it is fascinating. And it's a little bit mean, or at least it can be. And it's definitely an economic euro, but it's not like any economic euro you've ever played. It's a worker placement where the theme is building dams and associated additional structures, you know, turbines and that kind of thing, to take advantage of water systems as they flow downhill. And it gets a little crazy as people, you know, you've got your dam down at the bottom of the river, and then somebody spends the money to build in the mountains where it's, you know, harder to harder and more expensive to build, but now they've stolen your water. And
interesting.
It is, to borrow from the Game Brain podcast, it is a knife fight in a phone booth. Yeah.
Barrage, hey, or Barrage. I can't say I've ever played that, but you are inspiring me to check it out. Okay, I can picture the artwork now. Yeah, very dark looking.
It is. It's got sort of a steampunk aesthetic, which I don't know. It's a bit of a putting a hat on a hat design-wise, but the game itself is just amazing. And I don't know if I said this already, but I'm not really a big Euro fan, but this one has got me.
Nice. No, that's good. Well, maybe it sort of defies certain tropes then.
It sure does. It's unlike any other game I've played.
Nice. Brilliant. All right. Apparently, I need to play games with you more because you're playing different games than I'm playing. So that's a good thing.
Let's do it.
All right. Brilliant. Do you have any other board games you've been playing?
Well, we touched on this before we were on air, but I've in my regular weekly group, we've started three of us within it, and then other people join in bits and pieces. Three of us have started an 8x8 challenge. We're playing 8 different games that we've selected 8 times each. And actually last night we finally completed going through all of the games once. We've got a couple of them up to 2 by now.
Okay.
But last night we played Oath for the first, well, we've played it together before, but it was the first time as part of our 8x8. And whew, we were rusty. It was a rough game of Oath. But
so Oath is also a Cole Whirley game?
It is.
Kyle Farron, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Leader Games. And they are also coming out with a Kickstarter of new material. The Kickstarter is closed by now, but I'm sure there will be late pledges available, called New Horizons. And although we didn't add it last night, we do have the print and play ready to go. So now that we've reminded ourselves how to play, probably in future versions, we will start adding the new material in and seeing how that works. So I'm excited about that because it's a weird game, but it's a great game.
Very nice. Another one I didn't really wrap my head around, but I know it's not as... Is it also asymmetrical like Root, or is it slightly
not
different?
Really. There is... Essentially, there's three possible roles in the game. Exiles, citizens, and the Chancellor. You always have the Chancellor. And then, I guess, you probably always have at least one exile. I haven't thought that through. Probably you do. And they all effectively operate the same. Like, the variations are more in power levels than anything else. And win conditions is the main thing that's different. So, but those vary from game to game as it is. So,
nice. All right. I'm going to move on and talk about some other genres. Yeah. I've been getting into more TTRPGs lately. You might have noticed from the news that I was sharing. How much tabletop role-playing do you play, Kennedy?
I used to play a lot when I was a teenager, and then mostly didn't from about the time I went to university and had no time until the pandemic. And then myself and the friend who I started role-playing with when I was a kid got our daughters together and started playing online. And I got right back into pretty much D&D. That's, you know, as far as I've genuinely explored it. I mean, I know there's a lot more than that, and I've pulled out. I'm a Root fan. I did get the Root core book, and read it for fun. You know, have never played.
Nice. The Roots RPG has a cool system that underlying it, the Powered by the Apocalypse system, which is very popular. That's a good choice there. So I've kind of similar to you. I got into it in my teens. I actually, unlike you, didn't get into D&D first. I got into a very 90s system called Shadowrun. Sort of cyberpunk with fantasy. So it has dwarves and elves, but it also has, you know, chain guns and drones and cyber hacking and stuff like that. So very schlocky. It's still played even to this day. But I realized that the system is terrible. Like, the dice rolling part of it is bad. And I actively dislike it. And that's basically why I stopped playing it. So I guess I'm trying to recreate that the love that I had of playing those games, but with more ease of actually getting them to the table.
Yes.
So I've met with some success there. Been trying different systems out, but my preferred play style is a lot more narrative. Mm-hmm. And a little bit less crunchy. So I guess more theater of the mind, as you might call it. So when I learned about this new VTT, which is a virtual tabletop system, it piqued my interest. Now, there's a lot of VTTs out there. You're playing online, so maybe you use basic chat or something like that. What are you using for your online role playing?
When I first got back in, I was using the various office tools I had available. Really, you know,
and just like Zoom or Teams or something like that.
That kind Skype. Of thing. And exactly. And I was using Microsoft Visio for creating dungeon maps and stuff.
Well, that totally works. That's great. That's really good. Like, because, you know, role-playing games have always been by the seat of your pants improvisation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there didn't used to be all these nice bobs and whistles. So far be it from me to say that anyone has to use really fancy tools. This one that I'm going to be talking about is free, though. It's called Alchemy VTT. It is it actually does have some nice bells and whistles, but it is free. And how they make their money is that they sell modules, so you can get a version of, I don't know if they have Player's Handbook, but they have from a lot of more indie RPGs, which I enjoy. Like the Fallout RPG from Modiphius. They have Morkborg, and they have a bunch of stuff from Free League, like Coriolis and Vaisin. And they actually had a bundle on Humble Bundle of their content for Alchemy VTT. And I was like, I don't know. I don't want to be tied to this dumb platform that I might not even enjoy.
Right.
And then I actually looked into it and it seemed right up my alley. So basically they're all about theater of the mind. They kind of have like these tableaus that are a little animated and you can like overlay weather, for instance. So it's a dark and stormy night. So it's like a static image, but there's like raindrops dripping down and you got thunder and the rain tinkling noises, and you can underlay dramatic music and you can have little flashing effects and things like that. So
I love living in the future.
Yeah. It just seems like, it seems like that hanging out in your, you know, parents' basement sort of thing, but with like a little bit more stage flair to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is perfect for me being an ex-theater kid. So
I think that sounds really cool.
Yes, I've done this sort of thing. I know that you perform, you like to perform music, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, hell, I okay, this is a total separate off podcast conversation. Yes. But yeah, theater, like, I mean, I spent the first 25-ish years of my professional life as a professional theater artist.
I was never really that far, although I performed on stage. I performed at the Vogue Theater downtown, which is fairly decent-sized theater, production of Godspell. A lot of theater during high school, musical theater, in fact, so singing and performing.
I'm amazed that I did not know this about you.
Yeah, I've played both Jesus Christ in Godspell and Captain Von Trapp in The Sound of Music, believe it or not. very, very awesome. Open-minded awesome. Casting at my junior high school.
Well, yeah, I guess we rewind the clock a bit. People were a bit more resistant to...
No colorblind casting back in the 80s and 90s for some reason. But anyways, all that aside...
We'll come back to that privately sometime.
Yeah. Role-playing is great because it gives me an opportunity to like be dramatic and tell those stories and have adventures with cool people.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was interesting. Alchemy VTT, go check it out. It's free to start. They have some free like starter modules and stuff like that. And the content even isn't that expensive. Like you can buy individual adventures for like $5.
Oh, wow.
You can buy all the files for like a system, which would typically in PDF form cost you maybe $20. You can get it for like $25, but with like virtual animations and things. So kind of cool.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I think that was the same basic model, that Roll20 started with.
Yeah. Roll20 definitely has that. So. But the thing that bugs me about Roll20 is that like it sort of assumes that, I'm going to use a grid and I'm going to have like these lighting sources and I'm going to like knock down this door. And basically if you give people hammers, and everything looks like a nail, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you give these people tools to do tactical combat, every game's going to devolve into tactical combat. And you don't have to do that in modern RPGs.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that in any RPGs.
Yeah.
The story could literally take you anywhere. So hopefully, I don't know. That's just my perspective. If you like tactical combat, all the power to you, and definitely use those systems that you like.
Well, I will say this, that when my friend and I first sat down with our daughters to play D&D, and in the very first encounter, suddenly characters were facing a troll, I think, and my daughter's instinct was to go up to it and introduce herself to it.
There you go.
My friend and I just kind of went, oh, wait a second. This is going to be very different from our murder hobo days. And we didn't even know that, that it was, that the world had changed. And it was amazing. It was the best D&D of my life in the end. So
yeah,
it was
great. That's brilliant. Kind of video games have kind of like ruined us, right? Like video game, they're actually good now. But back in the old days, that's all you had is like, do you want to hit it? Or do you want to cast a spell, or do you want to run away? Like that's all you could do, right?
Yeah.
The verbs were very limited.
Yeah.
But now,
and that's where they came from, right? Is they came from tactical simulations originally. So, I mean, it took a long time to turn into something new, but it's great that it did.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's essentially like D&D has the baggage of basically being two games. It is a tactical war game bolted onto this like dramatic like improv camp or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, and you kind of like flip a switch and you turn either side on.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there are other ways about it.
Yeah.
And there's also like really good just like tactical tabletop games too that you could just play as well. So
yeah,
I don't know. Anyways, I blather on. But I'm just excited that there are those options out there for people.
For sure. For sure. Yeah.
How about yourself? Do you have any plans to be doing any more tabletop role-playing soon?
For sure. I'm definitely, I don't know if I'll make the switch, but I am excited to check out the new D&D Player's Handbook.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I can get a copy in my hands. And, you know, I do have this game, and it's been around for a million years, and yep, I have wanted to play it, and someday I'm going to get to, and you're probably familiar with it, Paranoia.
Yes, yeah. That's another age-old game. Yeah.
And I heard about it when I was in university and was like, right, oh, this sounds, and just read just enough to go, yeah, you know what? I need to stop reading about this so I can experience it.
Yeah, it's kind of like 1984, like the role-playing game.
Yeah, yeah. And every opportunity, I was actually even signed up for a session at a convention, and something went wrong with the sign-up, and they had both in-person sign-up and digital sign-up, and they didn't transfer the digital to the personal.
Oh, no.
When my daughter and I showed up to play the game,
oh no,
it was full. It was like, yeah, we signed up 2 weeks ago for this. Like, people on this list signed up yesterday. It's just like, you know, I'm not going to be a jerk about this, but oh my God, I was this far away from, you know, finally getting to play this.
Okay, that does it. Yeah. We got to make it happen. I also, I'm pretty much in the same boat as you. Like, I've heard about this legendary game. Sounds hilarious.
Yeah.
I know some people that have played it, so let's make this happen. Before next TCTC, let's make this happen. And maybe we could even get a game of it on the show floor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Because I know you're a big fan of sort of, not exactly mega games. What are they called? Like the kind of the games, like the certain game that takes place in a tower, the type of size games that you like?
Oh, like the
Blood in the Clock Tower, right?
Blood in the Clock Tower, yeah.
What's the other game?
Or maybe you're talking about Two Rooms and a Boom is the
Two
other
Rooms
big
and a Boom. Yeah, like,
one that I really love, yeah.
You know, what is that called? Like, there's those games that are, like, not really played at a table.
Yeah, I'm not sure. They do call them, well, yeah, I've heard them referred to as mega games, but I think mega games are really more of a LARPing adjacent kind of
thing. I think mega games are kind of like, in terms of like length, like I think they're like supposed to be like an
several
all-day
hours
thing.
And
So I guess like LARP adjacent, but not necessarily like hitting each other with boffer swords or anything. I think some of them can be like very diplomacy, like for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, yeah, I represent Sweden and you represent Italy or something like
that. Yeah, and them over there are the invading alien force.
Yeah. So there's no terminology for games like Two Rooms and a Boom and Blood on the Clock Tower?
There probably is. I mean, loosely they both fall into social deduction. But, you know, they are, as much as I love them both, they are, you know, and they have some similarities in that they take a dozen plus people to play and, you know, a certain amount of space to get those people to, you know, give those people space to wander around in. But if there is a common name that, you know, that brings both of those together, into one, I don't know it.
Well, isn't Winter Palace a little bit of that? Like, there was a dozen, 15 people when I played it at TCTC with you.
Yeah, absolutely. That is 100%. You know,
so how do you sell that? How do you sell that to people if they've never played such a game?
If they've
such an experience?
That is a good question. Well, in our case, I mean, I will, regardless of whether they know the term or not, I will identify it as a social deduction game.
Okay.
And then, you know, you play with, well, in our case, we do need a minimum of 7 people for Winter Palace. So you need, you know, 7 plus people. Everybody gets their own individual role, And then, you know, the game takes place, in our case, it takes place at a series of four balls at a fictional winter palace in some Eastern European country. And we are genuinely inspired by a trip we made to St. Petersburg before Russia became an awful place again.
Yeah.
And each of the individuals have different goals, which they are trying to achieve through the mechanics of the game, which is played out in the court, in our case, through a bunch of dances. And a dance in real life, you know, dancers, people dancing at a ball would exchange favors with one another, little tiny gifts. And that is the mechanic of the game. Those gifts are different things, which you are either attempting to get or attempting to avoid. And you get results at the end of each ball that you go to. And at the end of four balls, you see if you have achieved your goals or not. You know, the princess is attempting to exchange love letters with her consort, the love of her life. The young prince is attempting to get assassins to assassinate the young prince so that he can bump up the line of succession, et cetera, et cetera. There are over 15 roles that we're currently working with in the game, but we have many more ideas, but we're not going there until we are better able to test the game digitally. So
It's definitely social, definitely requires a bit of a crowd, and everyone is kind of motivated by roles.
And I mean, you know, yes, in Blood on the Clock Tower, people sit down and wait out the night when the night phase occurs in those games. But in all these games, they're very much up on your feet, wandering around, interacting with people.
Yeah. And ultimately, I guess if you boil it all down, they all have a great grandparent, which is sort of like werewolf, right?
For sure. Or mafia. They're the same game.
Yeah, they're the same game. But the sort of social deduction game, that's game never needed a board, right? They hardly need, in the early cases, they hardly need pieces. If you remember what role you are, you know, you don't need pieces at all. So it's kind of like a folk game, or I guess a werewolf is.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I think it literally was a folk game. Then it kind of got codified in university crowds. But I guess it's kind of developed to its own kind of social con game, because most of these are played at cons where you can get a decent number of people together.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's when we first had the idea for Winter Palace. We ended up in conversations with various people involved with each of Two Rooms at a Boom and Blood on the Clock Tower at conventions. And, you know, like, hey, Steve Medway, how do you play test a game like this? And, and he was like, you're looking at it.
Right.
And I was just like, oh, duh, of course. This is where you find
you play the
people
it.
To consistently play this kind of game. Just gave my head a shake. It seemed so obvious as soon as it was said.
And I think, you know, the aforementioned mega games sort of make sense, or LARPs, is like you kind of can't playtest those because you need to have that many people to even achieve it, right? So you can only base it loosely upon hearing about things, reading about things, and just kind of going on a whim and doing it.
One of our team members on for Winter Palace actually referred to it as a mini LARP, and I was like, that's interesting. I mean, I'm not sure where that definition comes from. I'm pretty certain he made it up himself.
Well, you could, I mean, if you really think about it, you could take it to the greater extreme. It's like, once you codify things, once you have finalized things, and once you quote unquote like package or ship it, then people could like have a night of it, right? They could dress up. They could dress up like the princess. They could dress up like the prince or the assassin or the priest or something like that. They could do it in a palace sort of situation.
For like, sure.
What's that?
They can bring
that
masks, castle like a masquerade
Toronto?
Ball.
Casaloma. You could do it like that. So maybe that's your aspiration. You got to make that happen, televise it, and it'll be a huge hit. Just like those Juventus games in China, right? Those are huge.
Oh, yeah. Oof, God.
Have you watched the People Make Games Jubensha episode with Quentin from Shut Up and Sit Down.
No, I have. I've only watched a few episodes of his new adventure. Quinn's Quest, I think it's called.
Quinn's Quest. Yeah. All those are very good, but there's only a few of those. But watch his other channel, People Make Games.
Oh, okay. All right.
You'll love those because there's a couple of them. One of them is about this this post-apocalyptic LARP festival.
Yes. It's sort of like Burning Man meets LARP.
Fallout.
I watched that one.
Yeah, that one is awesome. Anyways, yeah. I feel like we're getting far off course, though.
Way off course.
But having fun catch-ups.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Speaking of, I'm going to mention a couple of video games because they're on the top of my mind. One is a public service. There is this game called Soulstice, Soulstice. Thought it was going to be like a Souls-like, kind of like Elden Ring or something like that. It's not. If that was the assumption, that was my bad. No one said it was. But beyond that, cut to the chase, it's not very good. It's not very fun. It looks nice. The action is very fast. The backgrounds are kind of interesting. It has this kind of animated look. The backgrounds are at weird angles. The character is very lithe and sort of jumps from place to place. The gameplay plays fairly smoothly, but just didn't have a lot of ironically soul there. It was just going through the motions while I was tapping to kill the throngs of baddies. And just as a public service, I'll say maybe avoid that one. It didn't really do it for me. Okay. That's Soulstice. Any video games you've been playing?
Well, you know what? I'm going to go public service as well here then as well. Okay. I heard such good things. Maybe that's overstating it. I heard good things about Crusader Kings 3. It's a medieval simulation. And I'm going to take the med out of that. It's an evil simulation. You do things like I'm going to arrange the murder of my nephew so that the line of succession is not as complicated and, whatever. I'm going to spend whatever months and months sieging this, small neighboring duchy it just goes on and on. I haven't got to the point where I feel like it's moving into colonial issues, but it is so close to it that
Crusader Kings, it sounds like it must take place during the Crusades and movement into the Near East. Is that it? Or does it mostly take place in Europe?
I think you get down as far as Turkey, if I'm not mistaken, maybe even further south than that. So it's definitely got this, it's definitely coming right up against some topics which I just kind of getting a little hard to justify in the world today.
I can't really play those, not really Civ games, because Civ games can go quite a big span. They can go from 10,000 BC or whatever to far into the AD, but I can't really get into those colonization games like the Anno. I think there's this game series from Ubisoft called Anno, and there's Anno 1772 and 1800 and whatever. And those games used to make me so excited, I'm landing on the shore and cutting down trees and making a camp, and boy, am I industrious, and man, I could be super efficient at collecting all the sugar cane or whatnot. And then part of when I think about it now with the history of context and being a grown ass adult, I realize how kind of skeevy that sort of stuff is and how exploitative it is. And I could kind of justify myself doing that in space-based games because there's not really any life there. I'm just getting this Vespene gas from this planetoid or something like that. But I do definitely feel a little skeevy doing that in kind of rough parts of history, let's just say.
And I mean, sure, these things happened, right? So we shouldn't be running away from them you know, as far as an educational thing. But as soon as, sure. as soon as you start playing it, I mean, this is old. People have had this conversation a million times. But, right. you know, as soon as you're playing it, you're kind of glorifying it in a way.
You're kind of celebrating it, at least. Yeah. I kind of feel the same way about playing Puerto Rico. You know, that game 100%. I really mechanically love, but I don't know if I can get into that again.
Yeah, with the little brown pieces.
Loading them off of the boats. Just not great. Yeah. Not a great feeling. It's really unfortunate. I mean, they could have... I think they kind of did a half rebrand of Puerto Rico, but I don't know if they went all the way.
Rings a bell. Something like that that did happen for sure.
Yeah, I should check out the new version. I won't write it off completely just yet. Okay, another video game I've been playing was one called Nier Replicant. So that's N-I-E-R. So I had played the game called Nier Automata, okay. I think, which is brilliant. Love that game. It's that game, speaking of kind of off the wall, zany, non-traditional, that game has so many bait and switch genre changes, perspective changes. Okay. It's definitely like kind of an auteur game, you know? Uh-huh. And I don't know, I forget the name of the gentleman who's the director of it, but I think it's the same person who was responsible for Nier Replicant.
Okay.
Replicant was actually the first game out of the series, but Automata became more famous and more successful. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of re-released Replicant, and it's a bit weird. It starts in a modern setting, kind of post-apocalyptic, and then goes back into a very medieval fantasy world, but the characters mm-hmm. are the same, but maybe the medieval fantasy is taking place in the future. So it's doing some weird, funky things.
Okay.
But I kind of love that. Like, it's just like, you thought it was going to this way, but it's really this way. It's kind of like pulling tricks on you, making you like the, what is it? Unreliable narrator of this thing. Yeah. Just you're the unreliable gamer. It's like, what am I playing? I kind of like games that take the piss out of you. Not really torture you, but play with your expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And that game, I'm not very deep into it, but it is definitely doing that. So kudos to Nier Replicant. I want to play some more of that.
Interesting. Yeah. You made me think briefly of the, and this is going to be a major spoiler alert for, you know, anybody who can get their hands on it who hasn't played it, but the end of Shadow of the Colossus.
Okay. It's been a while. I have a copy of it. If you have a good condition PS2 right now, I have a copy of it right over there. But I don't think I ever beat it, so.
Oh, yeah, I did. And boy, I mean, such a wonderful game. I loved it.
Okay.
And then you get to the end and you find out you're the bad guy.
Oh, there you
Which
go.
Which maybe was obvious when you thought about it. But
yeah.
There you oh, my go. God. Yeah, it is a gut punch, that one. Holy smoke.
More games should tell you that you're the bad guy.
Yeah.
Because quite often we do bad things. I mean, there's the theme of the night. any other games?
The other game that I'm playing, as much as I play anything, video game wise, and has been since lockdown and the pandemic, Oxygen not included, which I'm going to start. Yeah, it is so great.
So good.
So great. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that, the Clay who creates it, I don't think I even have to cross the street to get to their office. Like, I think
they're local. That's
literally in the same block as me.
Oh, wow. Even more local. You're hyper local.
And it just started pressing the right buttons while we were all locked in confined quarters. I was like, oh, okay, this is my little world.
That's the theme of the game is you're basically like, it's, I like to call it human ant farm, right?
And that's a good way of putting it.
So you start with like, what, three humans?
Yeah.
And they have different personalities and different traits. And you're kind of literally like in an ant farm perspective, everything's 2D and you basically have to like direct them roughly.
Yeah.
They have to complete tasks in their own time, but basically you're kind of unlocking trees of technology, maintaining their health and kind of exploring these
finding very new biomes. And,
And they're procedurally generated, right?
Mm-hmm.
The different worlds. Yeah. But this DLC, what's new with this DLC then?
Well, yeah. See, I'm really not very good at this game. I need to state that up front.
Okay. Yeah.
despite having played it for years. So it's called Frosty Planet. And I mean, it's what you'd expect. You know, in the original, you'd find yourself fighting the rising heat. And in this version, you're absolutely fighting to keep the heat up so that people don't get hyperthermia and die. And yeah, a bunch of new winter ice related materials. You get new animals that are adapted to the cold in various ways, new plants that similarly, and of course, a bunch of new technologies, which are related to the same theme. And I have only just scratched the surface of it, just because I am that bad at keeping my colonies together. For the longest time, I would only ever play it on the maximum difficulty. There's only two difficulties. I would only ever play it on the maximum difficulty just because I was a purist about it for God knows what reason. And and yeah, I would rarely get to 1,000 days worth of duplicate survival. And only recently have I kind of broken down and been like, okay, well, I'm going to actually let myself use the sandbox tools so I can explore these new things, you know, and see, you know, how can I combine these different tools together to create new machines? And because if I don't do that, I'm not really going to ever get to, you know, play in depth. And I know there's all kinds of players of this game who spend hours working this stuff out with sandbox stuff.
There's many a wiki page was written about all the interlocking systems. Like this is a game that you could have like an entire college level course
for sure,
describing the ins and outs of. It's kind of mind-boggling what this game is asking you to do. But humans are very resourceful.
Mm-hmm.
The players can learn to adapt.
Figure out things.
And it's supposed to be hard, right? It's a survival game. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be hard. So don't feel bad. Don't feel bad that you've let some of
your people die. Part of it is I refuse to read the wikis. Like, I got to figure these things out, you know, myself, right? I'm just, it's maybe a bit of a disorder. I don't know.
that's what you like to play. There's no wrong way to play.
100%.
No, that's fine. Yeah, 100%. I've watched some YouTube video tips and tricks about it, but I've also failed to make them work too. So I guess do what you will, do what you must to survive.
Absolutely.
That's really cool. Well, I could go on and talk about Oxygen Not Included forever. It's one of the few games that I've had to forcibly uninstall from my computer so that it would not take more hours out of my life.
Right.
And this conversation is sort of inspiring me to reinstall it. So you've done that to me, Kennedy. You've done it. Planted that seed in my head. Well, I feel like we've covered some good ground there.
For sure. For sure.
Awesome. Well, I have learned that you like social games, replayable games, games with many expansions, mm-hmm. and that a lot of these games I haven't given a good fair shake to or haven't tried at all. So if you will, let us meet together in person sometime soon.
Absolutely.
Maybe not sometime soon, maybe like next week. I don't know what the date is. Let's meet and play some games.
Absolutely. I'm gonna have some bachelor time in the next couple weeks here, so, you know,
fantastic.
It should be easy for me to schedule it.
So, that sounds great. Okay, so as I promised, I think we talked a little bit about Winter Palace. You said it's mm-hmm. still in development, but are there any other places, any ways that we can keep up with Winter Palace game development or just stuff that you're working on?
Sure. The two things that I should mention are for Winter Palace, www.hobbyistsordabblersgames.ca is our website for that. And you'll find various bits of information there and how to contact us. Nice. And the other thing is, this will be for people who are local to Vancouver. I guess not exclusively, but I do run a Discord server for Blood on the Clock Tower called Pacific Coast hosts Blood on the Clock Tower. And we do have regular live games in Vancouver. And originally, back to the pandemic, originally Pacific Coast Hosts started just as a friends and family opportunity to play games online together and gradually expanded. And we used to do a lot of digital games as well, but for reasons I'm not going to get into, about a year and a half ago, that fell apart. Hopefully we'll have digital games there again in the near future. People have been talking about it. It's a much larger community by now. Like it's quit being the dozen or so people who originally started it. So
awesome. Well, I will happily share out those links on the show notes. So go check out Hobbyists or Dabblers Games. .ca, Kennedy Goodkey, and the games that he's playing or making. So next episode will most likely not be a featured game either. I have another local guest lined up. Sorry, Kennedy, you're not getting a repeat call just yet. So we'll have another local guest lined up for next week's further playlist discussion. So until then, reach out to us at omnigamers@club@gmail.com or at our website at omnigamers.club, or if you haven't checked us out there yet, you can catch these episodes roughly every week on YouTube because we've been starting to put videos there as well, or catch us in your podcatcher if you caught us on YouTube first. I want to thank Kennedy Goodkey for being my very good spirited guest this week. Thank you, Kennedy.
Hey, thanks, Mark. I'll hug it. Boy, oh boy, I will talk about games anytime.
Awesome. Well, that's what we love to hear. So until next time, everyone out there, have a very balanced diet of gaming. Bye.